Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 357. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such an incredible show for you this week with one of my favorite people on this planet. Let me introduce him to you. The Reverend Dr. R. Scott Colglazier is the senior minister of First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, the oldest Protestant church in the city of Los Angeles. He has served a number of churches throughout his career, most notably University Christian Church in Fort Worth, Texas, one of the largest churches in the country, and the famed Riverside Church of New York City. He is the author of several books, including Finding a Faith That Makes Sense, Circling the Divine, Touchstones, Yes to Peace, A Dictionary of Faith for Open-Hearted, Open-Minded People, and his best-selling Christmas book, A Winter Name for God. His work as a religious leader has been highlighted on CNN, The Today Show, CBS Morning Show, The Advocate, The New York Times, and I assume several Van Morrison fan sites. We'll talk about that. He is really, as I said, one of my favorite people on this planet, and now he has returned to us. Reverend Doctor, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Ken, it is a delight to be with you. I hope you're doing well, and it's nice to talk today.
Do you know that it's been 3 years since we last spoke?
Oh, say it ain't so.
It is.
Say it ain't so.
It is. It is.
The world has changed in the last 3 years.
The world has changed, and we're going to talk all about it. We have a lot of ground to cover. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
Well, let's call out the elephant in the room. I am catching you on your summer sabbatical. On May 22nd, you began your summer sabbatical, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And you said this, you wrote in your wonderful blog, Take a Breath, which we will link to. Everyone has to check that out. You wrote this: I'm looking forward to time to think, time to read, time to feel, time to clear my head, to look back on my life and look ahead to my life. Most of all, I look forward to the freedom of waking up and deciding what I want to do on any given day. How's it going so far? We're only a few days into it. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Ken. In fact, you know, a lot of different things going on. But the thing that I'm doing tomorrow is that I'm going to spend a little time with family. So I'm going to go to Chicago, see my son and daughter-in-law. And then I'm going to go to Indianapolis to see my other son and family. And so, you know, I'm able to do some of these things now, being a little more free. And then I'll come back from that and spend a lot of time up in Carmel, California, where I like to go, and doing some writing and breathing and just trying to get in touch with some of those deeper things that get pushed to the side because of work and activities during the year.
Now, you're making a bit of an exception for me, which I appreciate, but it is my understanding that you are disconnecting a little bit from social media during this time.
I'm planning to do that. And, you know, I love to use social media. I have a blog, I Take a Breath, and I always post that. We post my sermons online and everything like that. So I use it primarily for work and trying to get the word out, like you do with your great show. But I also think that maybe this summer is the time for me to step back from it and do some different kind of writing and do some different kind of reflecting. And so during the year, it's all about writing sermons or it's about writing a blog post. But I think this summer I'm going to be focusing a little more on a book and trying to get some traction with a new manuscript.
I love it. I love it. I have to ask, is there a conflict or a push and pull between people being fully present in their faith and technology? I would imagine that sometimes one, maybe the technology piece, might get in the way of that.
It's really interesting because obviously technology is here and it is all around us in so many different forms. And on the one hand, I find it really exciting and I love it and it's so wonderful. You can stay in touch with people and connect and reconnect with people that you might not normally do. On the other hand, I do think sometimes that people are so connected to their technology, either their phone or their laptop or their iPad, that they're watching the reality of the world through their devices rather than actually experiencing the world itself. And I worry about that. I see people at events and they're taking so many pictures with their cameras, including selfies, that it seems that sometimes they're missing the event itself. And so, you know, what I hope is that people can find time to nurture the deeper human feelings and the deeper human experience within them. Technology can help with that, but it cannot completely do that for us. So I think, you know, withdrawing a little bit, shutting it down every now and then is probably a very healthy thing to do.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me. All right, before we cover everything that's going on in the world, we have to turn back to you. It's been so many years. To remind our listeners why this work, sir. Why do you feel that you were placed here to do this work?
Well, thank you for that question. Ken, for me, a lot of people go into the ministry of the church for a lot of different reasons. You know, some people go into the ministry because they want to save the world, and other people go into ministry because they're just fascinated with the study of religion and faith and philosophy, because all of those things really are about trying to understand, what does it mean to be a human being? Why are we here? Who are we? What is a life supposed to be about? And for me, at least, those were the questions that really drew me into ministry. And so consequently, what I try to do when I write my blog, what I try to do when I preach a sermon, is that I'm not coming at it from the standpoint of, here, let me give you the answers. Instead, what I try to do is open up with the people that I speak to or write for and say, these are my questions. These are the real existential questions of my life. I'm still grappling with them. I'm still working through them. And I invite you to come along and do the same for your life. And so that's why this is so important for me. And so to have an opportunity to be a voice of what I hope is compassion and understanding and offering a more progressive, open understanding of the Christian faith, that's really what I feel called to do, and I really love doing it. I said in the sermon a few weeks ago that, for me, God is the ultimate question, not the final answer. And I think that's really important. And when you find yourself on the journey and you begin asking yourself questions about who am I? Why am I suffering? What makes me happy? Those are the human questions. And to me, to explore those is really what faith is all about.
I know one of the tenets that really resonates with the work that you do and who you are is this idea that the greatest glory to God is a human being fully alive. What has been your experience? What have been the obstacles that you commonly see to people being fully alive?
Well, I can answer that in a couple of different ways, but from a religious perspective, I think one thing's really interesting, that there is this model out there with regard to faith. And it's not just the Christian faith, but faith across the board. And it's the idea that what God really wants you to do is to become something different, something better, that you have to improve yourself. You have to clean yourself up. You have to become a different kind of person in order to please God. To me, that is the wrong model. My understanding of faith and my understanding of God is not that God wants us to become something different. I think God wants us to move closer and closer to who we really are as human beings. And when we become who we really are as human beings, and that takes courage and it takes openness and it takes time, then we start feeling more aliveness. We start feeling alive within our own skin because we are at home within ourselves. And so part of what I try to do in the church is to say to everybody who comes through our doors on a Sunday morning, I just try to say, you are here today and we welcome you today. We know you're on a journey today. We're not asking you to become something different. We're asking you to move closer to your true self. And to me, that's where I think we find the greatest kind of aliveness. So that's kind of one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that I think there are some practices that people can engage in their life that really does enhance their living. And this is where I think, again, a faith tradition can be helpful, but it comes from other places as well. And so, for example, if a person cultivates their sense of gratefulness, What I find, at least, is that when I am grateful, I am alive. And when I am not grateful, I feel dead inside. And so cultivating gratefulness, or cultivating the capacity to let go of mistakes, mistakes of your own, mistakes of other people, these are all practices. And whether it's a meditation, whether it's a prayer, whether it's yoga, whatever it might be, these kinds of things help us find that true center within the true self. And when we do that, I think we really have a much higher sense of aliveness and actualizing who we are as human beings.
I always feel after you and I talk, like you can, if you want to, you are fully empowered to bill me for spiritual guidance for our time together, because I get so much out of it. So just, I'll give you my address after. You'll send me a bill. It'll be fine.
Absolutely, yes. It'll be a big bill, of course.
Of course, of course. Now, for our listeners who don't know, tell everybody about the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles.
Well, yes. So it's a really interesting place. First Congregational Church is the oldest Protestant church in the city. In fact, next year we will be celebrating our 150th anniversary
of
the church. And now, of course, compared to some churches in Boston and New York, that's young. But for Los Angeles, that's an old church. We are home to one of the world's really most beautiful Gothic cathedrals. And it is such a lovely building, and it is such a dynamic congregation. We've really become a church that has tried to open the doors of our church as wide as we possibly can. I say to people, we want to open our doors as wide as the heart of God. And from my perspective, that's pretty wide. And so we try to do that. And we have a community of people here who really not only love the church, but they really love one another. And our church has really undergone a transformation over the last several years. When I first started here, our church was really at a low point. But I felt like that something good could happen inside this beautiful Gothic cathedral. And so slowly, month after month, year after year, we just kept building. We kept attracting more people, different people. And now we are a place that really, I think, is a kind of crossroads with the spiritual journey, the artistic journey, the journey of diversity in the city of Los Angeles, as well as supporting the common humanity that is all around us. So that's First Church. It's an amazing place, and I'm going to miss it this summer, but I'm certainly looking forward to coming back in September.
And we should mention, lest Christoph Bull get upset with us, pretty nice organ there as well.
Oh my gosh. It is the largest church pipe organ in the world, and we have just one of the great musicians, Christoph Bull, here in Los Angeles, just does amazing work. And along with our director of music, Jonathan Talberg, those guys are just genius. And what they do with that organ, with the choir, it is just something special every week. In fact, the last Sunday, before I started my sabbatical, I had a little request because I love this Van Morrison song titled The Alan Watts Blues. And Alan Watts was a Buddhist teacher, kind of in that beat generation in California in the 60s. But Van Morrison has this wonderful song about Alan Watts. Jonathan had that song performed. He and Christoph and a few others performed in our service before I left. And it was such a great send-off. And so that's what you find in our church. You know, we have a diversity of music. Something very high and classic, but something also can be sort of pop and folksy. It all gets integrated, and that's one thing that I just so much love about our congregation.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, has the Supreme Court's decision on marriage equality affected the work there at First Congregational Church of Los Angeles?
Well, it really has, because, you know, myself and others, we were advocating for this change, and we felt like it was long overdue. And one of the things that I did when I first arrived is that I just made it very clear to the church, and then we started making it very clear to the community that we were a church that was completely open and affirming of gay and lesbian persons, the LGBT community, and that became such a breath of fresh air for us. And then we created this partnership with Vox Femina, which is a women's musical group, primarily lesbian, not exclusively, and then the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. Both of those groups rehearse here in our building every week. They perform in our services a couple of times each year. And so we were really, you know, trying to lead the way in terms of opening up our doors to the gay and lesbian community. Now, because of the Supreme Court decision, we've had so many wonderful celebrations and marriages and wedding ceremonies in our church. And to this day, I still remember the very first gay couple that was married in our church. And it was just such a moment of blessing. And I remember in my little homily, I kind of said something about it, and I just said something about the historic nature of it. And everybody broke out in applause in the middle of the wedding. It was such a great moment. So, you know, we continue on. We recognize that there's still work to be done in our communities, in our cities, but certainly grateful for all that is happening here now.
I should say this November, I am performing my first same-sex wedding. I got ordained online. I don't know if you scoff at people like me, but it happened, so we got to move on from it. What advice do you have for me? I'm going to be doing my first one. What should I know?
Well, first of all, I think it's great that you do that because obviously somebody asked you to do it and they mean something to you and you mean something to them. And so that's a great honor. And what I would say is, you know, I always sit down with a couple, try to get to know them a little bit better. I try to understand what they want in the ceremony. I try to have something in the ceremony that sort of brings everybody together, a reading, a poem, a reflection of some sort. And I know you are going to do a fine job, but keep me on speed dial. If you need to call, I can help you through it, okay?
Ugh, what I feel like you're saying is this is really about them, not me. This is a little bit perspective-altering for me.
Well, you know, that's the problem with this thing, Ken. You know, it's not always about you. It's certainly not always about me.
All right. I guess I got more work to do. Again, listeners, we are here with the Reverend Dr. R. Scott Colglazier. Now, the other flip side of current events that are everywhere are the proliferation of religious protection acts. Does religion need protection right now, sir, from the LGBT community?
Well, the answer, of course, is no. And I think, you know, I come at it from the perspective when you have sort of mainstream people, religious people, claiming that their rights are being broken and not honored because of the LGBT community, I think that is nothing but a smokescreen. It is nothing but a smokescreen for old-fashioned prejudice and bigotry and hatred. And so, you know, the point of religion is, at least from my perspective, it's to make the world bigger, not make the world smaller. And so, you know, yes, we have freedom of religion in our country, and we value that. But freedom of religion doesn't give us a right to infringe upon the more fundamental human rights that belong to every person in our country, every citizen.
Yeah. When you look at your colleagues in other denominations, you know, certainly right now, your brothers and sisters in the Methodist faith are really wrestling with these issues. How do you wrap your mind around all that? You know, we talk week in and week out about the power of voice. Do you feel pressure to use your voice to speak up about it? Do we let these conversations just happen within their own denominations? How do these things affect you?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, when you look at what's going on, say, in another denomination, it's certainly interesting. You know, to me, from my perspective, if you have a denomination today still struggling over the acceptance and affirmation of gay and lesbian persons, it just makes religion look so stale,
yeah,
so out of step, so behind. And so it winds up hurting them so much more. You know, I get that. I understand that people have different ideas and different feelings, but We're at a time. The change has already happened. We now recognize that there's nothing wrong with a person if he's gay. There is nothing wrong with a person if she is a lesbian. And so we'd have to find a way to affirm that and recognize that's part of the gift of who they are and celebrate that and welcome them into our faith communities. I'm glad we do that at our church. And there are a lot of churches out there doing that. And of course, you know, not all of them do, but there are several.
Yeah. Well, I have exciting news to share with you, but I also am seeking your advice right after this news, because you would not know this, and actually many people in my life do not know this, but my partner was just accepted into seminary. He will be starting in the fall. Very exciting.
Fantastic.
And I will say, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this on the air. I'll check with him and edit it out if I'm not supposed to, but
okay.
Got a full scholarship to seminary.
Awesome. Where is he going to be going?
He is going to be going to the Ohio Methodist something or other, which begs my question. Here we are, right?
Yes.
You've done so much work on interfaith, all things interfaith, and here I am as a gay Jew who I have a sense of the word Methodist, but I'm not even sure, you know, exactly what it means by the fact that I don't know the name of his seminary, which I'm sure I'll get in trouble for later. Talk to me about this idea of interfaith relationships, and I'm so excited for him. So it's not a matter of not honoring this beautiful journey that he is about to embark upon, but I know that a lot of people in my life struggle with this idea of interfaith relationships.
Right. Well, you know, I get the challenge for some people because, you know, if a person's Jewish, there's also the whole question about Jewish identity and not wanting to compromise that. And that's true of other faiths as well. At the same time, it seems to me that what you and your partner have an opportunity to do and what many others have done before you is that they can make life richer, not by somehow diminishing the other's tradition or trying to have a person switch from one tradition to another, but instead to have a mutual respect of one another's religious background and tradition, to support the other in it. And I think especially Christians and Jews have this opportunity because we both are from the faith of Abraham. There's so much that we share. And there's been so much exciting work done over the last several years that really helps Christians understand and affirm Jewish people and the Jewish faith. And rather than trying to convert them away from their faith, it's more now affirmation and support and mutual respect. So I'm really glad to hear this about you and your partner. I really thought that you would eventually come to Los Angeles and preach from the pulpit, but now maybe your partner's going to get that opportunity.
Exactly. I'm just doing weddings. I'm for hire. That's it. That's it for me. Well, can we talk about the flip side of that? As I mentioned to you right before we got on the air, I just got back from a two-week mission in Guatemala working with a wonderful NGO called Mission Guatemala. And I experienced for one of the first times the flip side of everything that you just spoke so sagely about. There were some individuals with whom I was volunteering who are about as liberal gets, you know, liberal academics as we sometimes are in university life. And some of those individuals really struggled with the idea that our group said grace for what, 16, 18 seconds over breakfast in the morning. And I then experienced that flip side of, which sometimes happened, and I don't think we talk about it enough, that liberal intolerance of, oh, no, faith cannot intersect with our lives here. And I don't really have a tolerance for that either.
Yes. And it also is interesting because there's clearly a shift going on in our nation. You're finding more and more people talking about their identity as either agnostic or even atheist. And I understand that and I respect that. I would never want to put anybody down for that reason. But I do think that if just because one person happens not to be a quote-unquote believer, there's no reason why that person has to diminish someone who is.
Yeah.
And I think if people could just recognize that there are some practices that belong to faith that also have a kind of universal application. And so just to be able to before a dinner to acknowledge the gift of the food, the gift of the table and being together. And whether one's praying directly to God or a God or the God or to the universe, whatever you want to say, there's something really beautiful and healthy about that practice. So my hope is that liberals won't just be liberal in their heads, but also liberal in their hearts to people who differ from them.
Also, it's 18 seconds long. You can get through grace with no problem, my fellow Jews.
Yeah, yes, yes, exactly. And your food won't get cold. It'll really be okay.
Exactly. Exactly. It's okay. It's okay. You know, one of my favorite topics that I know that you have spoken about is this idea of the fire of everyday life. And I know you did some of this work abroad as well. I think it's easy when we talk about, oh, I'm going to seminary and having this special day, or I'm performing a wedding or these very significant events. But then we have, you know, the other 360 days a year. Right. How do we motivate through those days in a way that is so present?
Yes. So that's a great question. And I don't know that there's any one answer to it, but I think part of what we can do is just to do our best to live as mindfully as we possibly can, recognizing that every moment in life, in one way or another, is a gift, and so we touch our gratefulness. There can be some little rituals that we can engage, giving ourselves these little mini moments of just quiet or reflection before launching into the day or doing that at the end of the day. And I think all of those things have a way of enhancing our aliveness and our connection with other people. So, you know, so many different people do it in different ways, but at a certain point, it seems to me, one of the great keys to our living is to nurture and try to listen to some of those deeper voices. You don't have to go to some big, beautiful retreat to do that. You don't have to go into a beautiful church building to do that. There are lots of ways to do that individually and quietly. And they really do make a difference. I mean, honestly, 60 seconds of quiet can truly make a difference when you're centering yourself, breathing, and just reflecting upon something for which you're grateful.
I got to 40 seconds the other day and was quite proud of that.
Well, you know, it's not a contest, okay? So just do what works for you.
Good, good. Well, let me hit one other hot topic with you. As I mentioned, week in and week out, although the number has changed slightly with a new legislation that was just passed in Vermont, but in 45 states right now, it is still legal to perform the what has been proven to be the harmful practice of conversion therapy. And the reason that I raise this with you is that all too often, I might even say in the majority of times, conversion therapy, reparative therapy is being done in the name of faith, or at least under the guise of faith. This idea that individuals can change either their sexual orientation or their gender identity. Apart from the fact that medical science says that actually is not what happens, what does it mean to you that it's being done under the umbrella of faith?
Well, I find it really disturbing.
Yeah.
And again, I come at it from the perspective, you know, what if we've learned nothing in the last few years, one of the things that we have learned is that over and over again, gay people, lesbian people, transgender people have said to us, not this is what I want to be, but they say, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And if we cannot honor, this is who I am, then to me, we're just making a huge mistake. I hate that it's done in the name of God. I hate that people promote this. Instead, I think what people need to do is to kind of come around to this idea that our job is to honor the person as he or she is. If we can do that, that becomes a profoundly religious moment, a healing moment, and a moment of great wholeness. So, I know what you're talking about. I hear about it. I read about it. But it just goes in the opposite direction of everything I know and believe.
There it is. There it is. I will tell you, I perhaps, and maybe I don't, maybe it is an accurate impression of you, although I think I perhaps have an inaccurate representation of you in my mind. In my head, there's just a ray of sunshine that follows you everywhere. Everything is intentional. But I suspect that every now and then you do, as an individual, encounter a cloud or two. Is that correct?
Oh, Ken, I can be a hot mess like everybody else. Okay?
And how do you motivate through the hot mess times? A phrase I did not think I could ever get you to say.
Well, you know, it's sort of like it's just part of your human experience.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just get afraid, and sometimes you really get discouraged, and you reach out a little bit to a friend here and there. You try to pick yourself up. You say a little prayer to the great universe that we live in and ask for help and strength, and you just try to go forward. And, you know, what I have found over and over again is that every time I face real challenges, it's also been interesting the number of times the right person shows up, the right letter arrives, the right email comes through. And it reminds you that, well, maybe you are making a difference and you keep going forward. So this is part of life, and I think it's also an example of why it's so important that we encourage one another as best we can.
I love it. I love it. Do you want to tell us anything about this book that you perhaps might be working on this summer?
Well, that's a good question. It's still very early, but at this point in my thinking, I'm trying to write a book that I've titled tentatively, In the Land of No God, an Odyssey of Faith and Loss. And what I want to try to do is help people understand, partly through my own story, and to try to say that sometimes what we call a loss of faith is not so much a loss of faith, but a changing of faith. And that there's some ideas about God that some of us grew up with, that some of those ideas no longer resonate, doesn't mean that we've lost our faith. It means that it's time for maybe some better ideas, some better understanding, some bigger ideas about God. And so I'm hoping to answer some of those questions and try to write it in a way that's interesting and engaging for people. So that's my thinking at this point.
Okay. Sounds good to me. I'm not really worried about you writing it in a way that's interesting to people. I think you've proven that already. That ship has sailed, sir. That ship has sailed. Well, we will end with you as we have ended twice before. It's really the same question, and it's the question that has to come up all the time because we have so many listeners in any different parts of the country who are struggling to reconcile their faith with their sexual orientation and feel the two are mutually exclusive. To those listeners, how do you counsel them along that path?
I just want to say to them that the most profoundly spiritual thing that you can ever do is to be true to your own reality, and that includes your sexual orientation. Don't try to become something you are not. Be who you are. Know that you're loved. Know that you're cared for, and there's always a community somewhere that will support you and celebrate you and encourage you on your journey. So that's what I want to say. And I hope people can feel that and know that they're not different and they're not marginalized. People are who they are, and that's what needs to be celebrated.
There it is. Listeners, you can stroll on over to our scoleglazier.com. We will certainly link to that. You can also, on that page, link to the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles. It's quite a place to visit. Let me say this about you, sir. I often take this moment to heap praise upon my guests with all sorts of flattering comments, and I am not going to do that with you, because this is what I will say to you. I really feel like my opportunities to speak with you are what this world is all about. I enjoy the opportunity to do this show. I have for 8 years now, and I've talked to just incredible people. But after I speak with you, I walk away, as I am right this very second, feeling like, yes, That is one of the purposes of us all being here, our two individuals communing in this way. And I'm just so appreciative of your voice, the way that you approach this work, and just your overall energy. I'm eternally appreciative.
Ken, thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. I always love talking to you, and I follow the program, and I follow you on Facebook. But I also want to say, what you have done, you broke new ground when you started this show, and every time it's broadcast, you send out with great humor and great affection for people and respect for people, send out thoughts that are healing and that are hopeful. And I love what you're doing. I thank you, and I'll look forward to the next time.
There it is. Have a wonderful summer sabbatical, sir.
Okay, you take care, Ken. Thank you.
This is how it's always been. Sun comes up, the day begins. People come and then they go. I've been around long enough to know. If you have a single seed, that's enough, that's all you need. And if you're lost in the night, keep the river on.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBTQ news out there, so let's get started. This comes to you from The Advocate out of Tennessee. The mayor of Nashville is speaking out about her city's loss of conventions due to Tennessee's adoption of an anti-LGBT law. She is telling potential visitors that despite what the state may do, Nashville is a welcoming city. Mayor Megan Barry told Nashville TV station WKRN this, quote, "I am deeply concerned about the loss of revenue to our city because of action taken by the state legislature." And that action, let me tell you guys what that is. Since the state passed a law allowing licensed therapists to turn away clients who offend their religious beliefs, the American Counseling Association, the Human Rights Campaign, and the Centers for Spiritual Living have moved conferences out of Nashville. Mayor Barry still touted Nashville as an inclusive city. She went on to say this, quote, "My message to the community of folks who want to visit Nashville is come to Nashville. We are a warm and welcoming place, and we really don't want the city to be punished for the things the state may do, so we encourage people to still consider coming to Nashville." That has got to be a pretty darn rough gig, right? Because there are people doing amazing things in these states that are kind of not doing great things. You have all of our colleagues in North Carolina, everybody listening to us there on WPVM, The Voice, on 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. There are people doing incredible things in North Carolina. Hey, Asheville. They do incredible things in Asheville. But it's really rough when you're in a state where the state legislature or your governor is stepping forward and saying, no, we're just not as accepting as we can possibly be. Because there is this trickle-down effect. There are all these folks out there who have a negative impression now of North Carolina, when in fact, that's just a piece of life in North Carolina. I know we have people listening to us on WETX Detour Talk on 105.3 FM in East Tennessee. It doesn't mean just because the governor of Tennessee or the Tennessee legislature has passed a law that gives therapists the right to refuse service, which, by the way, is pretty much against a tenet of all therapeutic standards, you know, everywhere. That does not then characterize everybody who lives in Tennessee. this so-called bathroom law, which in fact is about more than bathrooms, does not characterize everybody who lives in North Carolina. So I can only imagine how difficult it must be to be doing the great work of LGBTQ resource building and discussion starting and just really providing these essential services for LGBTQ brothers and sisters and being one of those states that's being so unfairly characterized. It's rough. It's rough. And that puts me in a bit of a rough spot because we have stories about these places and I don't want people to walk away with the impression that, nope, this is the only thing going on in your state. So I'm going to read you in a second a story about North Carolina. But if you are listening to us in North Carolina, if you are listening to us there on WPVM The Voice, 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina, if there are stories that you guys want to highlight coming out of your state, just drop me a line. I love featuring efforts to raise up the voices of LGBTQ folks and, of course, allies. So just send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We want to do our part here to change the narrative, to at least flesh it out more so that it is more balanced, because we know there's more going on in North Carolina than what I'm about to tell you. The governor of North Carolina, he says that he is now going to use trespassing laws. Trespassing laws. I kid you not, for a third time, trespassing laws to enforce the restroom provisions of House Bill No. 2, while officials with the state university system now say they won't enforce the controversial law at all. At a ribbon-cutting ceremony for a candy factory last week, Governor McRory spoke about enforcement of the law, which, among other things, bars transgender people from using the restrooms in government buildings that correspond with their gender identity. Passed in a single day-long special session March 23rd to prevent an LGBT-inclusive public accommodations ordinance from taking effect in Charlotte, HB 2 came with no guidance for enforcement. Officials with police departments in major cities throughout the state have said they will not enforce the law. But this is what the governor now says. He says this, quote, "We're using trespassing laws that we were using before House Bill 2. We're using that now. But you know, it's just basic privacy rights, and that's trespassing, and we'll continue to do just like we were doing long before the Charlotte ordinance. So nothing's really changed in that regard," end quote. Now, the University of North Carolina system filed papers in federal court saying it will not enforce the law. UNC System President Margaret Spellings wrote in an affidavit this, quote, "I have no intent to exercise my authority to promulgate any guidelines or regulations that require transgender students to use the restroom consistent with their biological sex." She's an interesting person. So this is something that dovetails with my day job as a college professor, someone who teaches leadership in higher education. Margaret Spellings, if you don't know about Margaret Spellings and the Spellings Commission, she's a very interesting figure in our education process. So I would actually say, as someone who has studied her before and studied her writing, this is actually quite surprising. I'm quite pleased by it, but it's still a little bit surprising. So there you go, though. The University of North Carolina system saying that they will not require transgender students to use the restrooms consistent with their biological sex. But seriously, if you have some time, look up Margaret Spellings. She's an interesting character. An interesting character. More news of an anti-LGBT ilk coming out of Texas. Texas Republican Representative Louis Gohmert is no stranger to making outlandish and unverifiable claims about LGBT people, but on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives last week, Representative Gohmert suggested that the future of the human race might be in danger because sending gay people into space would doom future galactic colonies. Huh. This is a United States representative. I kid you not. Someone who actually shows up at the U.S. House of Representatives in an official capacity because he was elected a representative there in the great state of Texas. He opened his remarks by rejecting the existence of transgender people, suggesting that they have a series of mental disorders, but that simply means, he said, that these are people that we're to love, encourage, help any way we can. After a brief biblical interlude, the congressman's speech got downright apocalyptic, positing what humankind would do in the face of an asteroid or some other cataclysmic event. I can't believe this is a real show that I'm doing right now. I feel like I'm doing some fan fiction. No, friends, this is a real episode of This Show Is So Gay that I'm doing right now, and I'm actually doing the news part, lest you get confused. This is what Texas Republican Representative Gohmert said on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, and I quote, "We'd have spaceships that can go, as Matt Damon did in the movie, plant a colony somewhere. We can have humans survive this terrible disaster about to befall. If you could decide what 40 people you put on the spacecraft that would save humanity, how many of those would be same-sex couples? You're wanting to save humankind for posterity, basically a modern-day Noah. You have that ability to be a modern-day Noah. You can preserve life. How many same-sex couples would you take from the animal kingdom and from humans to put on a spacecraft to perpetuate humanity and the wildlife kingdom?" Yeah. I am getting a little bit, I've been going down a bit of a rabbit hole lately with hate watching some of these folks, in particular some of the people on Twitter. There's this dude, Chad Felix Green, who is a horrible troll, and he's gay. He is often on the Louder with Crowder show, or I guess he's been on it twice, and he fangirls after Crowder like you have no idea. But anyway, this is a guy who enjoys being introduced as Chad with AIDS. That's how he is introduced and sees no problem with it whatsoever. And basically, he is a conservative gay guy, young gay guy, young gay guy, probably in his 20s, maybe early 30s, also Jewish like myself, and just kind of loves irking people and loves being conservative. I have to believe in my heart of hearts that this gay guy does not believe half of what he puts out there, but it gets him attention. And these conservative talk show hosts have him on and say, "Look, here's a gay guy who makes sense." And I think this dude loves it. And this is what I do. I hate watch these people. And sometimes I respond, and every time I respond, I'm like, what the heck am I doing? It's kind of like this Representative Louie Gohmert from the 1st District in Texas. He is a Republican. And he's basically saying that sending gay people into space would doom future galactic colonies. He's saying this on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. Just when we thought it couldn't get any more wacky, hey, look, it gets more wacky. And by the way, let me keep going with that. A Republican congressman read colleagues a Bible passage condemning homosexuality during a meeting last week in an apparent denunciation of those who voted for an LGBT non-discrimination amendment to an energy spending bill last week. Representative Rick Allen of Georgia read the passage at Republican lawmakers' regularly scheduled policy meeting at the Capitol. He was implying that the pro-LGBT vote was sinful. In response, several congressmen walked out. By the way, I want to take this opportunity to remind you all these are not volunteer positions. You elected these folks, and they get paid for it, and they have power. One legislature, not identified by The Hill, called Allen's action, quote, I can't even say that quote because it's a cuss word, but let's just say that he called it ridiculous. A congressional aide added, a lot of members were clearly uncomfortable and upset. The Hill did not identify which Bible passage Allen read. Allen and his staff did not respond to the publication's request for comment, and an aide to House Speaker Paul Ryan, the top-ranking Republican in the chamber, declined to comment. The LGBT amendment has been a source of contention. It was designed to put into law President Obama's 2014 executive order that bars companies from doing business with the federal government. They are not supposed to discriminate against employees on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. An executive order can be changed by a future president. We'll see what direction that goes. The amendment, which was offered by Democratic Representative Sean Patrick Maloney of New York, failed on a 213 to 212 vote as part of a defense spending bill last week after several Republicans who had initially supported it decided to vote against it, leading House Democrats to chant shame. But the House then passed the amendment last Wednesday night, as part of an energy spending bill, but voted to kill the entire bill, even though the overall bill was Republican-backed. Just to remind you, Republicans have a majority in the House. Yeah. These are people who are elected by, you know, you and me. So, yeah, these are actual elected representatives who actually get paid saying things like this in our government. I'm not sure what else to say. I don't want it to get worse, but it's possible these things might get worse before they get better. These are the last dying gasps of denying equality. Things will get a little bit more intense as individuals set out to deny equality to, you know, everyone out there. But it's not just in the US. There are people saying nutty things abroad as well. The head of Australia's largest Christian lobbying group has appeared to compare the equal marriage movement to Nazi Germany. Lyle Shelton of the Australian Christian Lobby made the shocking claims in a blog, hitting out at the debate around same-sex marriage in the country. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has promised a vote on equal marriage before the end of the year, despite bitter dissent from his own party and anti-LGBT lobbyists. Shelton warned this, quote, "Changing the definition of marriage to entrench motherless and fatherlessness in public policy and teaching our kids their gender is fluid should be opposed. The cowardice and weakness of Australia's gatekeepers is causing unthinkable things to happen, just as unthinkable things happened in Germany in the 1930s. Perhaps we have moved beyond cowardice to complicity." He then added, by the way, he wasn't done. He didn't just liken it to things that happened in Germany in the 1930s, because that would be too vague. He had to be far more specific about what he was putting out there. So, Lyle Shelton of the Australian Christian Lobby, he went on to say this, quote, "Now I know some of my friends in the gay community will be saying, there Shelton goes again, comparing us to Nazis. Not so. The issues Australia faces are bigger than the rainbow political agenda." He insisted he is not saying people who dissent to today's cultural and political orthodoxy are about to be arrested by thugs wearing jackboots, but despite his attempted mitigation, campaigners were shocked by his comments. Because he had to specifically put out there, wait, I'm not saying that I'm comparing gay people to Nazis. I'm just saying that I'm comparing this situation to things that happened in Germany in the 1930s. So that's going on in Australia. There are other things happening in this world. This is not all happy news. I'm sorry. It doesn't happen. A notorious anti-LGBT activist has clashed with a school vice principal after berating students as they left a building. Angela Cummings, who is known to harass Target shoppers for using a store that allows trans people to use the bathroom that corresponds to their gender identity, she shouted at students of Scotia Glenville High School in New York State as they left for the day. She said, quote, "Many of you don't have knowledge. You watch too much MTV, gangster music, and you live for the devil. Some of you even smoke pot. It's time to repent." Worst of all, she asked the students, quote, "If an ISIS bomber was to come here now, how many of you would go to heaven?" She was asked to leave the school grounds by the school's vice principal, and then she added, quote, "Next year, Obama is going to let you men, you young men, use the girls' bathroom. It's time for you to start homeschooling. Just yesterday, a girl had sex in a bathroom, in a high school bathroom, with 28, and then she was cut off by the school vice principal. Yeah, I don't know what to say about this one either. Now we just have people standing outside of schools just yelling. There are people standing outside of schools and they're just yelling at people. What do we do with that? We use our own voices to say, hey, stop yelling at kids in a school. It's tacky. Yes, it's harmful. It's also tacky. That's bad too. Nick Jonas is back in the news. He said that he has no time for accusations of gay baiting, but the rampant media speculation over his sexuality shows no signs of slowing down anytime soon, according to the Huffington Post. Jonas, who has been romantically linked to Kate Hudson since his split from former Miss Universe Olivia Culpo last year, has garnered a sizable gay following through steamy photo spreads, appearances at gay clubs, and advocacy work on behalf of the LGBT community. By the way, I love that that's how this has been ordered. Number one, steamy photo spreads. Number two, appearances at gay clubs. And also, by the way, advocacy work on behalf of the LGBT community. The 23-year-old singer-actor has tackled gay roles on the small screen, too, on both the Audience Network's Kingdom and Fox's horror comedy series Scream Queens. In a new interview with The Sun, Nick Jonas sets the record straight for the umpteenth time, assuring the publication that he won't say he's never been with another man since he has experienced same-sex action. Now, this is the headline that everyone's running with, but if you read one more sentence, he is saying, yes, I have participated in sex with a member of my own sex, but it was in front of cameras. He said this, quote, on Kingdom, I have a sex scene with a guy. It's my lips, it's my hands, it's my body, even if I'm playing a character. So technically I've done that, so I wouldn't say I haven't, because that would be lying. Coincidentally, and I'm sure this is coincidentally, he is promoting a new album called Last Year Was Complicated. He has shrugged off those who believe he hasn't been upfront about his sexuality and may be secretly gay. His quote was this, quote, but as me, Nick, I am very open about who I am and that I have nothing to prove. I know what I am. I've been honest about that. This whole idea of gay baiting, can we see maybe some positive in it? Because I do want to end on a somewhat positive note. The fact that someone would even be doing gay baiting, the fact that someone would want public to think, hey, maybe I'm not entirely straight, that in itself is progress, right? Something? I don't know. I don't know, guys. There's a lot of news out there, and some of it is difficult to handle. But thankfully, we have amazing people in this world doing amazing things. One of them you heard from on this week's episode. Our huge, huge, ginormous thanks to the Reverend Dr. R. Scott Colglazier. He is doing incredible things as the senior minister of First Congregational Church of Los Angeles. Again, as I said repeatedly to him, it is just such an absolute honor to speak with him. Every single time I walk away thinking, oh, huh, there are more conversations I want to have on faith and spirituality. And so I am thankful for that. Another original episode coming at you next week. That's exciting. And I'm not going to tell you who we have, but it is a huge, huge social media star. I will just leave it at that. Hey, you can also stroll on over to podcastawards.com. The voting is going on right now, and you can vote for This Show Is So Gay, the show you're listening to right this very second. We are nominated for GLBT Podcast. It's right there on podcastawards.com. You can vote every day for the next couple weeks, but honestly, we're just so happy to be nominated and amongst some great company. So check out our show and all of the other shows out there. In the meantime, you guys, get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Everybody got pain, aching in their heart. They got pain, aching in their heart. So don't hold back. Trouble in their heart. Don't hold back. Whisper in my ear. Share it with a neighbor. Watch it disappear. The truth shall set you free.